Hello and welcome to Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly, fresh and back from Barcelona. What a fabulous city. Anyway, the news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A site at Bandura may be the oldest one in Peru. Old Skatness Broch in the Shetlands gets a reduced funding after a debate at the council. Rock art sites are found in India, while in Scotland a prehistoric settlement has been uncovered by a volunteer group. Ancient artifacts are discovered in a Thai cave system, and we have a report on whether dog burials were divine escorts for ancient Americans. A Pakistani dam threatens ancient carvings. An excavation on a settlement on the Lapita people yields fine jewellery, pottery and more on the Pacific Islands. Göbekli Tepe, the site of the moment, is a Turkish site which is setting the academic world alight, looking at the origins of human ritual. And finally, sea level changes may change your views on Arcadian landscape and climate patterns. And in fact, finally, we have a report on the ancient treasures which have been returned to the country of Burkina Faso. Bandura may be the oldest Peruvian site, and it's considered to be the originator of ancient American civilizations, according to archaeologist Alejandro Cubara, director of the archaeological project there. Several radiocarbon dates confirmed that Bandura dates back to 3200 BCE, while Caral only dates from 2900. He explained that the main reason for the development of highly organized cultures along the Peruvian coast was due to the availability of marine resources, which allowed an improvement in the population's diet. Bandura is located 140 kilometers from Lima and was discovered in 1973, with the first excavations taking place in 1977, which have continued until today. Just who knows what else they might uncover. Following on from a previous report, Shetland councillors this week turned down a 3-year funding request towards work on the old Skatness Broch in Shetland, Scotland, instead approving funds of just under £150,000 for this year only. Shetland Amenity Trust requested £381,000 over a 3-year period towards the cost of completing the interpretation of archaeological finds and to enable the site to continue operating as a visitor attraction and to develop detailed plans for making it into a year-round visitor attraction. Following a very heated debate during the first meeting of the Council's Revived Development Committee, members approved funding of £148,000 for the current financial year, but backed Betty Fullerton's call for the Amenity Trust and the Economic Development Unit to produce a more detailed plan of all the projects the Trust had in the pipeline. Ms. Fullerton said she supported the old Skatness Broch project, but it was vital that the council got a full picture of just what the trust was up to. Well, in a way, I would certainly ask the same myself. It was my cash. The Indian Department of Archaeology and Museums has discovered rock art sites in Warangal and Mahabubnagar districts, as well as priceless stone sculptures in Warangal and a Buddhist settlement in Visakhapatnam. The rock paintings in red, ochre and white pigments depict various types of animals such as antelopes and peacocks, and human figures are represented both hunting and dancing. There is also geometrical designs. The paintings are being ascribed to late Mesolithic times, approximately 3000 BCE. More surveys have been planned for the region. Bigger Archaeology Group in South Lanarkshire in Scotland have discovered the location of an ancient 5,000-year-old settlement site in a ploughed field at Carwood Farm near the town. Only after 2 days walking ploughed fields to look for evidence of the past, which is an annual spring event for the group, the ancient site was located. Tam Ward, the group leader, explained that last year they'd found a few flints at the location, and this time they noticed carbonized hazelnut shells and bits of pottery. Straight away, they knew this meant that they had an early Stone Age date, when the first people began to settle on the land, build houses, use pottery and farm the landscape. Such sights are very rare in Britain. After two grueling weekends, they opened a large trench and found lots of pottery, bits of stone axes and several pits cut into the ground. They all contained charcoal, which will be analysed and dated to give us a picture of what the landscape would have been like and an accurate date for the site. One pit was filled with pottery from at least two pots. This pit was discovered by Elliot Veitch, a young archaeologist from bigger museums. The 8-year-old said, "I love archaeology, but never thought I'd find something as old as this. The pottery is older than the pyramids." The site is covered over once again, but the group will begin searching more fields in the near future. So you see, you don't have to be a grizzled veteran to discover your own past. You can be an 8-year-old. Archaeologists found scattered artifacts and pottery belonging to the prehistoric period some 4,000 years ago in a cave in the eastern Thai province bordering Cambodia. The exploration was carried out after the local residents reported the accidental discovery of objects scattered in, and in some cases buried under, the floor of a cave large enough to accommodate hundreds of people. The villagers also said that objects of similar appearance in antiquity had been found in other cave sites such as Khao Jumpa and Khao Sa Thorn Mountains. The two caves are 7 kilometres apart. The site could be the location of an ancient community dating back to the prehistoric period, and they added that the site was possibly on one of Asia's major trade and cultural routes, connecting the present Chantaburi with an ancient community in Cambodia. While various scholars were aware of the existence of the ancient trade routes in this region, there's never been a formal exploration of the area. New research suggests hundreds of prehistoric dogs found buried throughout the southwestern United States show that canines played an important role in the spiritual beliefs of ancient Americans. Dottie Fuggett, an assistant curator at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture in Santa Fe, New Mexico, said that throughout the region, dogs have been found buried with jewellery alongside adults and children, or carefully stacked in groups, and even in positions that relate to important structures. Fuggett has conducted an ongoing survey of known dog burials in the area, and the findings suggest that the animals figured more prominently in their owners' lives than simply pets. She suggests that the dogs in the southwest were used to escort people into the next world, and sometimes they were used in certain rituals in place of people. To conduct her research, Fuggett collected data on known dog burials and urged her archaeologist colleagues to note when canine remains were found during excavations. She now has a database of almost 700 dog burials, and a large number of them are either buried in groups in places of ritual or buried with individual human beings. Many of the burials are concentrated in northwestern New Mexico and along the Arizona-New Mexico border. The database indicates that dog burials were most common between 400 BCE and 1100 CE. The earlier the human burial, the more likely you were to have a dog in it. By the 1400s and 1500s, the practice of burying people with dogs had stopped completely. Indeed, today's Pueblo and Navajo Indians believe it is improper to bury dogs. A high-level meeting was held between elected Pakistani representatives, officials of northern areas, and the federal government to review rock carvings that may be impacted by the proposed Bashar Dam. Reportedly, thousands of rock carvings have been discovered so far during the last 3 decades by German scholars in collaboration with the Department of Archaeology. The survey is still under process to document these rock carvings spread in different areas of northern part of Pakistan. More than 50,000 petroglyphs and over 5,000 inscriptions in 39 different scripts and languages have been recorded so far along the Karakoram Highway in the northern areas of Pakistan. These rock carvings are threatened and endangered due to the proposed construction of a dam near Basha. It's estimated that about 30,907 out of 32,405 rock carvings will be submerged by the Basha Daima Reservoir, including 3,290 inscriptions. At the Basha Daima Reservoir, it's a project of national importance, and a meeting was arranged in Islamabad in order to discuss the various issues for safeguarding the endangered rock carvings. The meeting unanimously decided that the unique petroglyphs will be removed wherever possible from the location of the reservoir and preserved in the museums to be established at Gilgit and Chillas. All the other important petroglyphs will be copied using a 3D digitizing scanner, and replicas will be displayed in the proposed museums. One has mixed feelings about that, but it's best that they actually are being recorded so thoroughly, so good luck to them. Excavation of the earliest human settlement in Fiji has yielded fine jewellery and high-quality pottery made by ancient Lapita people some 3,000 years ago and never produced in the area since. This came with an announcement of archaeological finds, including the first ever discovery of Lapita jewellery cache on the southwest coast of Fiji's main island, Viti Levu. Lapita people, the original colonisers of South Pacific, are believed to have migrated eastward from the Bismarck archipelago of Papua New Guinea to Fiji, Tonga, Samoa and other Pacific islands. The two-month excavation at Burawea Beach found stilt houses built above the sea, quantities of Lapita decorated pottery and stone tools, and of course the big mystery of the high-quality jewellery cache. The jewellery made from shells was found under an upturned clay pot, which was a deliberate burial by someone 3,000 years ago. The cache consisted of 9 shell rings, 4 shell bracelets, and 6 necklace pieces, also made of shell. Within a decade or so of arriving in Fiji, the Lapita people were producing exquisite shell jewellery and were also producing intricately decorated pottery. Yet about 550 BCE, they disappeared as a distinctive cultural group. After that, you don't see anyone in Fiji making shell jewellery or pottery quite like them. Klaus Schmidt, a member of a German archaeological institute, has found in Turkey a temple complex almost twice as old as anything comparable. Within a minute of first seeing it, he knew he had two choices, either go away and tell nobody or spend the rest of his life working here. The stone circles of Göbekli Tepe have now been his workplace since 1994. Compared with Stonehenge, they are humble affairs. None of the circles that have been excavated, 4 out of an estimated 20, is more than 100 feet across. What makes them remarkable, though, are the carved reliefs of boars, foxes, lions, birds, snakes and scorpions that cover the standing stones and T-shaped pillars. It's also their age. They're dated around 9500 BCE. 5,500 years older than the first cities of Mesopotamia and 7,000 years older than Stonehenge itself. Ian Hodder, a Stanford University anthropology professor who's directed digs at Çatalhöyük, Turkey's most famous Neolithic site since 1993, explained how previously people used to think only complex hierarchical civilizations could build monumental sites, and that they only came about with the invention of agriculture. Göbekli Tepe, however, changes everything. It is elaborate, complex, and pre-agricultural. That fact alone makes the site one of the most important archaeological finds in a very long time. With only a fraction of the site opened over the decade of excavation, Göbekli Tepe's significance to the people who built it still remains unclear. Some think it was the centre of a fertility rite, with the two tall stones at the centre of each circle representing a man and a woman. Mr. Schmidt, however, remains sceptical. He agreed the site could well have been the last flowering of a semi-nomadic people that farming was about to destroy, and pointed out that if it was in near-perfect condition today, it is because those who built it buried it soon after under tons of soil, as though its wild animal-rich world had lost all meaning to them. However, the site is devoid of the fertility symbols that have been found at other Neolithic sites, and the T-shaped columns, while clearly semi-human, are sexless. According to Mr. Schmidt, he thinks we are face-to-face with the earliest representation of gods. They have no eyes, no mouths, no faces, but they have arms and hands. In his opinion, the people who carved them were asking themselves the biggest question of all. What is this universe? Why are we here? And with no evidence of houses or graves near the stones, Mr. Schmidt thinks the hilltop was a site of pilgrimage for communities within a radius of roughly 100 miles. And he also notes that the tallest of the stones all face southeast. Why are we here? A question I often ask myself. Anyway, we are here, so we'll continue with this story. A radically different picture of the prehistoric landscape around Orkney's World Heritage Site in Scotland is beginning to emerge, a landscape which perhaps doesn't feature the Stennis and Harry Lochs at all. Preliminary results from the Archaeoenvironmental Project indicate that prior to 1500 BCE, the Stennis Loch was an area of wet marshland surrounding small pools or lochans. The Rising Tide Project is looking at past sea level changes and prehistoric settlement around Orkney. Local archaeologist Caroline Wickham-Jones and Sue Dawson from the University of Dundee have been running the project since 2006 and have been gathering core samples. The analysis of the remains of tiny creatures known as diatoms, preserved in the sediments of both sea and loch, allow experts to pinpoint when the sea around the islands reached its present level. Sue Dawson explained that two dates have now been obtained which start to give a more precise idea of the period at which the sea reached its present level. The Echnaloch samples gave a date of 2340 to 2570 BCE, while at Voy in Stennis the date is between 1440 BCE and 1270 BCE. Compare this to the estimated construction dates of the Ring of Brodgar, around 2,500 BCE, and the Standing Stones of Stennis, around 3,100 BCE. By the time the Stennis Loch was fully established, the Ring of Brodgar had been standing for approximately 5 to 1,000 years. These single dates give an initial idea of when the sea level reached its present levels around mainland Orkney. The time lag between Voy and Echnaloch is likely to be due to the different geographical positions and sheltered nature of Voy. Caroline Wickham-Jones commented that archaeologically the dates are important because they indicate just how much the landscape of Orkney has changed since the World Heritage Sites were built around 5,000 years ago. Environmental reconstruction from the coring suggests that rather than being connected to the sea, the Loch of Stennis comprised of a lake with reed beds at the time when the Ring of Brodgar and the Stones of Stennis were first built. The subsequent flooding of the Stennis Basin took place over the later life of the monuments, making this an area of dynamic environmental change, which must have impacted on the lives of those living in the area. Around Orkney, relative sea levels would have been much lower for most of the Neolithic, raising the intriguing possibility of submerged Neolithic sites and landscapes in the shallow seas between the islands. The dates immediately raise a number of questions over the Ness of Brodgar. If there was no loch, for example, the theory that the stones were floated to their present position goes out the window. Another casualty is the idea that the standing stones of Stennis and the Ring of Brodgar were erected where they were because of an interaction between land, loch and sky. In June, the project plans further coring to refine the history of the Loch of Stennis. This is an absolutely fascinating story because it's showing that you can't just look at a site in isolation. In fact, you actually have to look at what the landscape was like when the monuments were built and being used. It's too easy to just sort of look at the landscape now. It's also going to be very useful for looking at climate change in the present day. France has returned to Burkina Faso, a haul of stolen archaeological treasures discovered in a northern French port. Philippe Sawadogo, the Burkinabe cultural minister, announced 262 items of national archaeological and cultural significance to the West African nation were returned via the French embassy in Ouagadougou. They praised the perspicacity of French customs officers at the French city of Rouen on the River Seine for the seizure in December 2007 of ancient ceramic, stone and bronze materials dating back to 1300 BCE. Sawadogo said that they had been stolen by a French couple, adding that France's return of the pieces to Burkina Faso's National Museum was a great sign of cooperation. The trafficking of cultural heritage is not new, though, with Burkinabe authorities seizing 200 statuettes in September 2004 at Ouagadougou Airport as they were about to be transported illegally to Europe. French customs also intercepted 669 items from Mali at Paris's main airport in 2007, along with further treasures from Niger. I have to confess, I just love a good story to end with, and I also love saying the capital name, Ouagadougou. Try that for the next week. And while we're at the end of the programme, can I remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, library, guidance section, can be found on Badger, www.bajr.org. Don't forget pasthorizons.com, where you will find all the latest in volunteer opportunities around the world, and the opportunity to read issue 1 of the magazine, if you haven't done so yet. It's all free. And remember, more can always be found at the fabulous Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return to us again next week.